Hello and welcome to the Utah Puck Report. Season 6 well underway. I'm your host, Jay Stevens. Gary Michaels is not here today. He's on the air, so he's doing the other radio job. But he will be joining us this season. We've got a lot of good co-hosts coming in this season. We're gonna just touch on all kinds of hockey in Utah. The University of Utah women's team, they're going to be doing really well this year. They've got some dynamic roller hockey players that we're going to talk to. A lot of cool interviews, and we're going to be talking a lot about junior hockey and how it's developing in Utah. I think the last couple of years we've seen real progression. And Dave Iamonte, did I say your last name right?
Close enough.
Iamonte, yeah. I've heard it like 30 different ways.
I'm not picky.
Well, how do you say it?
Iamonte.
Yeah, I get it. Pretty close.
Yeah.
So Dave, you and I have been friends for a long time. You've been on the show before. You're an agent, you're a team owner, and I felt like we're gonna talk to some of the other teams in the leagues, but I wanted to get you on first, and you're gonna do Hockey 101 for all of us. Just wondering what's going on with junior hockey in Utah.
Yep.
What team do you own? What's in the league? What makes it different than what you were doing in the past? So let's start with what's your team.
So I have the USPHL Premier Team in Vernal. It's the Vernal Oilers. We are playing at the Tier 3 level, which is the second highest level they have. The highest level being the NCDC, which Salt Lake and Ogden and those teams moved to.
Okay.
Idaho Falls, Provo. We play in the Northwest Division. We play Seattle, Bellingham, Medford, Oregon, Casper. So bit of a travel, hurdle, but the town's really, really rallied around the organization and they become proud of it for sure.
Yeah. That's a great little community. Yeah. I've been up there. I've coached out of that. I ran a couple of clinics out of that league or out of that rink. You were telling me that they're putting a lot of money into that rink.
Yeah. So the city is going through like a renovation of the facility there.
Yeah.
And I think it's in the $6-7 million range. And they're putting new locker rooms in. If you've been to that rink, you know that up until now they haven't even had showers or anything like that. The locker rooms were tiny. It was literally like a rodeo barn with an ice rink in it.
Yep.
I like it because it's gritty. Like last year, teams would show up and play us, and they get off the bus and just be pretty rattled that the facility was a little more blue collar than what they're used to down in the city, the bigger cities. So we were kind of in their head, and I think we had a pretty big advantage from the second they got off the bus.
Right.
And I want to keep some of that, but have a shower.
It's fun. Yeah. Yeah. The shower is important, especially with hockey, if anybody's smelled hockey gear. It's funny. The junior college I played for in North Dakota, that was our coach had kind of turned it. We played in this terrible little barn. Same thing. It was a barn turned into an ice rink. I don't think it had refrigerant. I think it was just naturally frozen. And our coach would say it before every game. He's like, these prima donnas are going to get off and they're used to their warm locker rooms and their blah, blah. And they're going to come in here, this blue collar. And there was some, like, we bought into it. As players, we were we really bought into that. And it's, I don't know, there's something to be said for that.
And I think it was huge for us. I think we lost one game in overtime at home last year. And then one game in the playoffs at home. Other than that, I can't remember the last time we've lost at home.
Wow.
And I think it's a huge advantage for us. And it's something that last year we didn't have the posh facilities. We got guys who really wanted to be hockey players. Guys who were advancement orientated. They didn't want to party. They just wanted to kind of focus and improve themselves. Being a smaller community, we have access to a lot of ice. And probably more so than what teams would get in a bigger city just because no one's using it during the day.
Right. So tell me a little bit more about this league. Who else is in this league? And how's it structured?
So our Northwest Division is, like I said, the teams in Washington, Oregon, Wyoming. There's also, out west, there's also Pacific Division, which is the California teams. I think there's a Vegas team. And so they're more condensed. We're actually probably closer to the Pacific Division, but just for numbers' sake, we're in the Northwest. It's a national league, so there's teams from coast to coast, Florida to Washington, California to Maine.
Wow.
So I think there's 70 some odd teams in the division.
Really? Wow. Yeah. I had no idea it was that size.
Yeah. And so at the end of the season, they'll do like a divisional playoff, and the winners of each division and a few wild cards will go to a national tournament. Last year was in Utica. We made it there, and it's kind of the top 20 teams in the country.
Okay.
Top 18 teams in the country.
So you make it to nationals. Who's scouting? Where are your players trying to go? Are they trying to go to another junior league, or are they trying to go to college?
There was a lot of like tier two scouts, a lot of D3 scouts. You know, I think there's one kid from Bakersfield who got a D1 commitment this year.
Oh, wow.
A younger kid. He went to Nebraska, Omaha. We had our goalie went to UMass Boston, which is one of the top D3 programs in the country. We had a few more that went high end ACHA just because it's, you know, was their academic preference.
Honestly, and I've said this before, and man, I took some heat for it, but ACHA, especially Division I, there are some of those teams in ACHA that could beat NCAA Division III teams. And you get players, because a lot of people don't understand the price difference in the universities.
Absolutely.
When you start talking NCAA Division III, you go to some school, or let's say, you know, UMass Boston, or you go to, you know, whatever. There's all these D3 schools, and they're great schools, but they're liberal arts schools or whatever, like Westminster, and they're like 50 grand a year, 70 grand a year, and they're not offering...
No on-campus housing, it's tough.
No scholarship for hockey, you get an academic help, or you could go play ACHA Division I at Arizona, at Utah,
Alabama.
Like
SEC experience.
Oh, yeah, I've seen some crazy stuff online about that team. And you play like a high level of hockey. It's those guys that are like, look, I'm going to school to go to school. I still want to play. I don't want to pay 70 grand a year to go to college. I'm going to go pay 10 grand and go to the U. So the hockey level's up there. So to be able to send players, like ACHA Division I is pretty good.
Yeah, we had, so our backup goalie, he wasn't really a backup. He was more of a 1B. He had several D3 opportunities, but he ended up playing ACHA Division I at SUNY Oswego. Because he got with academic scholarships and stuff, I think he paid like $6,000 or $7,000 all in.
Oh, wow.
For the whole year, like room and board, everything. And so it was just kind of a no-brainer. When you get to like a good academic institution and you're not paying a lot, I mean, you should probably go.
Yeah.
Especially if hockey's not going to be your lifelong career for a lot of these guys.
And that's the hard part, right? Is like realizing that, okay.
Swallowing your pride.
Yeah, realizing that maybe the dreams are... Not for us. Yeah.
But, I mean, you look at Minot this year in ACHA. They just, I think, played University of Regina and Briarcrest in the Alberta College League.
Yeah.
I mean, those are, like, U Sports and, like, Alberta College League is good hockey. And they beat them, like, back-to-back last weekend.
Huh.
So, I mean, that's something to be said for the level that's growing. I think the gap is closing for sure.
Yeah, I think so, too. So, we talked about room and board. What happens with your players? Where are they coming from? I mean, because obviously you're not fielding a team of Vernal players.
No, we have two local players on the team.
Okay.
But
who are they, by the way?
Tanner Flitton and Kenny Huber.
Okay, I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but yeah.
No, this year we usually have about two. I'd like to have more, but I mean, it's just trying to ramping guys up to a higher level of play.
Yeah.
Because the one thing about our community up there is they expect a winner, and there's a little bit of pressure on us from a staff to put together a competitive team because they really get invested into it. And if the team was subpar, they'd be disappointed. I mean, they're very proud of the organization and the success that we've had. And, you know, we feel an obligation to stick to that route. But we have guys, we have an Italian, a Norwegian, a Russian, two British kids. What else do we have? A little bit of everything. We've had Swedes before.
And you just set up, you have billet families for all these kids?
Yeah, about 30 billets there.
Oh, wow.
We're very, very fortunate that our billet situation there is probably one of the best in the country, I think, at any level. We have a pretty big surplus of them. And
really?
We've never had an issue of finding housing for a kid.
Yeah, because that's not usually what you hear in these junior leagues. They're always begging.
Scratching and clawing.
Yeah, it's always so hard to get it. So for people that maybe don't understand how junior hockey works, you know, you leave home at 15, 16, whatever, and you go to a town. And if you're, you know, if you don't end up in Omaha or Dubuque or whatever, you end up in a different league and you end up in Vernal. Well, you can't just go stay in a hotel for the whole season, so you got to find a family. And these families take these kids in. A lot of times the relationship becomes like it's a family. Like people, I was talking with Mason Manick the other day, and he was telling me like he still keeps in touch with
for sure
all of his billets, and him and his like his mom and dad, like when they go on vacations, sometimes they meet up with some of the billets, and they really have united as a family. And then that family has the benefit; they don't really make any money off it, right?
No, I think they probably lose money, to be honest.
Yeah, can you pay them? I know, like here in the valley, I know like the Ogden Mustangs. And the outliers are paying like $400 a month per kid.
That's what we do too.
But you got to pay them like that $400 a month turns into that's what you that's their food.
Yeah.
So really, the benefit is off the. You get to go to the games. You get to watch a player kind of strive and play throughout his dream, and then you've met this other person, and who doesn't like more love in their life, right? You get to this awesome person, this awesome experience. And then you get to watch them grow up and become people.
Well, and we've had a lot of the kids come back in the summer, the foreign kids. I mean, in a small community like Vernal, you have, I mean, a lot of these guys, they're, I mean, it's the cultural diversity of the whole community. I mean, how many Russians have lived in Vernal?
Right.
I mean, how many Slovakians? And we had 4 Slovakians last year. I mean, so it's a pretty cool for people from a smaller community to get a taste of maybe what happens in a different part of the world. Their customs, their interests and beliefs, and I think so far so good. We haven't had any negative experiences, and these families go above and beyond for the boys. And I'm super grateful for all they do. I mean, they're eating steak and lobster a lot of nights. Like it's unbelievable. Like it's they're taken care of better than they are at their own house.
Wow, that's so awesome. That's that just makes it that much cooler of an experience for those kids to come. And Vernal's such a cool place. What a great little area. Like it's just perfect for a hockey team like this, like a minor league or a junior hockey team.
It's the perfect size town, I think, for it. It's kind of a blueprint for this level of hockey. I mean, we've been asked about our interest to move up, and I mean the community would be a smaller one at that level. I think we're on the border of being able to do it or not. And, the big question is, do we want to survive or do we want to thrive? And that's a conversation me and my group are having right now to try to figure out. But I mean, I just think that it's something that they've been kind of dying for up there. And the community, like you said, like everyone, I think the Salt Lake has a misconception that it's a lot smaller than it really is. It's not just the town, it's the communities around it.
Yeah.
And their buy-in to anything about the community is quite high. And I think they are very, very proud people, and they, want to see their small community represented on a national scale like that. So
is there anything else up there that competes with you guys?
Like the rodeo.
The rodeo. Yeah. So it's not like weekly, is it?
No, it's once a year.
Okay.
Like we were there during playoffs, I was a little concerned that because it was like a rodeo and like a knife show the night of one of the playoff games. And I'm like, oh geez, we're going to have a brutal crowd because of it. Well, we fit 650 in an arena that fire code is 250.
Oh, wow.
So
is the new arena going to have new
double the seating and stuff like that.
Okay.
But it's kind of cool. Like when it's 5 deep around the boards and they're opposing teams coming off the ice and getting heckled and stuff, like it's, it's a pretty cool experience, I think.
Yeah, but it's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm definitely coming up for a game. I want to experience every bit of hockey in Utah that I can, and this job just kind of gets...
The rink's freezing.
Yeah. I love it. That reminds me of North Dakota. I love it. Yeah. And that's... when we were doing the clinics up there, I just liked that rink is cold. I liked it. I was getting dressed on, like, in a little shack.
Oh, yeah.
Basically attached to the inside of the rink. It wasn't a locker room.
It was the ref room now.
Yeah.
Oh, it was. Nice. I think it's like a storage shed essentially with chairs in it.
When are the changes going to be done? When is this rink going to be final?
The goal is to have our locker room ready for home game number 1, which is the first weekend of November.
Okay.
I think like done for the whole renovation. They're also doing like a lobby on the front. They're doing, some improvements to like the concession areas and stuff like that. But we, I think the done target is by the first of the year.
Okay.
Like everything polished and done up.
Wow.
So, I mean, we'll, right now we're practicing in Salt Lake just because of the construction.
Oh, geez.
So it's a bit of a, you know, a little bit of a hurdle, but I mean, yeah. I tell the boys at the end of the day, it'll pay off when you have a brand new room and everything like that.
Do you guys bus down or do they just drive individually?
We do a little bit of both.
Okay.
Yeah, we bus down. If they're going to stay for a while, a lot of them want their cars. So, but if they're just going for the day, then we bus.
So you mentioned that you're looking at moving up or that the potential's there. Explain to us what's the difference. Like your league is, the payers pay their own way in this league, right? So it's a pay to play, which just so that we all know, what does a player have to pay to play in this league?
Our guys are about, somewhere in the 5 to 10,000 range.
Yeah.
Just depends on where you're from, your nationality and stuff. There's some additional fees associated with the foreign player coming, like insurance wise and stuff.
Okay.
But if you look at the value based on what you would pay to play like midget AAA, it's a pretty good value. I mean, they get all their ice time, which is daily practice, gym time, food, all their travel costs.
Yeah.
I mean, like they get a lot for what it is, and we rely a lot on ticket sales and sponsorships to kind of balance out the budget. We don't make a nickel on it. We do it because I quite enjoy it.
Yeah.
I think it's fun and it's rewarding to see, especially after working with all the pro guys for a long time. It's rewarding to see some of the guys on the fringes, work their way into a credible level. And like we had a Slovak kid last year sign in the top Slovak league. I mean, that's a really good league.
Yeah.
And, like the North Americans going over East Coast League, American League level players.
Right, yeah.
Like good ones. And I mean, this kid is thriving there right now. So it's as a 19-year-old, which is not common. And so it's good to kind of see guys like that get their chance because of us and, humbling for sure.
So are you guys practice, how many games a season do you play?
44. It's 40 plus four showcase games. In Vegas, we'll do that one this year.
Okay.
They kind of let you choose what showcase you go to, but Vegas is just a convenient one.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you pick Vegas?
The parents love it. So we have a ton of Canadian kids and like something about Canadians in Vegas. It's like their big vacation and, they love it. Like all the parents drive down and make a weekend out of it for sure.
That's awesome. Like when I was coaching the Ogden Mustangs, we did that showcase in Vegas, and man, what a great time. The tournaments were good. The players were having a good time, but the parents were having, they're getting their money's worth.
The parents enjoy it. Yeah,
it was a good time. Okay. So that's your league. If you moved up, is it all just corporate sponsorships?
So NCDC is the next level up, tier two. So it's on par with the North American League. I think potentially it could be better at some point because they allow unlimited foreign players.
Okay.
Whereas in the North American League, I believe it's four.
Yeah.
And so you have potential to get a significantly better caliber of player. Once the product grows a little bit, I think it'll be pretty interesting when it does. But those guys are maybe a little bit younger in some cases. And they're more D1 orientated. At our level, the reality is if you're 18 to 20 and you're playing at our level, you're a D3 guy,
right.
Which there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's still something very attainable to shoot for. But, at the NCDC level, you have an opportunity to get seen by Division I, recruiters and stuff like that and earn a scholarship to play.
Oh.
I know the East Coast product of that level has been very successful. I think the team in New Jersey couple years ago, I had like 16 D1 commits on the roster at one point. I mean, don't quote me on that, but something pretty high like that.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a ton, and they do a pretty good job at advancing guys. It's mostly corporate-driven camp. They have camps to generate money as well.
Yeah.
But sponsorships and stuff for the most part, and people with deeper pockets for sure.
Oh, that's awesome. It's nice to know there's some, like, back in, like, you and I, I'm a little bit older than you, but back in our day, there was like, you didn't make Junior A, now you play Junior B or Junior C, and I don't know if that stuff still exists, but that was like, I don't know, I just felt like less opportunities, or maybe it's just the same thing renamed, but it just seemed like once you played Junior C, it's pretty much
enjoy your life.
Yeah, just have a good time playing that year. We talked a little bit about you being an agent, and you had, you know, we ran into Ryan Kanasiewicz right before this started. Tell us, a lot of our listeners really care about the Utah Grizzlies, and you were mentioning some of the Grizzlies. I know one offhand that that was a crowd favorite that you represented and shipped off. Can you talk to us about a couple guys that, are you allowed to say it? Like,
yeah.
Who did you represent from the Grizzlies that won't be with the Grizzlies this year?
I think the only one this year is Johnny Walker.
Okay.
We put him overseas in the UK. He's doing a master's degree program. So over there, they have a pretty cool deal.
Yeah.
Where you can make comparable money to the East Coast League, but you also get like a 9-month MBA. So, I mean, it's a pretty good, you know, way to combine hockey with school. And it's like, you know, you graduate 9 months with a postgraduate degree and can go. I mean, you're not going to walk into a Fortune 500 company and run it, but I mean, you can at least put yourself at the top of the list
right. When
you come to getting a real job at some point. And it allows you the flexibility once your schooling's out of the way to go and enjoy hockey for a few years and maybe take a few risks and play in less traditional places or a cooler place just because you've
like
got
China.
Your school. Yeah, China Dragons.
China Dragons.
Yeah. Or a lot of guys want to go like to Italy or like south of France and stuff like that. And, you know, enjoy a different country every year type thing once they have their schooling.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I think maybe gets lost on the Grizzlies fans is like when Johnny Walker signed somebody somewhere else, I was watching the boards, which maybe I shouldn't, but I watch all the hockey boards in Utah. I hear everything about women's hockey. I hear everything about, there's like three or four different Utah Grizzlies fans pages now. But man, everybody was upset. They're like, I don't understand. I thought he liked Utah. And what happened? It's like, nothing happened. This is an opportunity. Like, the Grizzlies were an opportunity. And maybe, like, for some players, they come here and they're like, if I can make the AHL team, then maybe the NHL team will recognize me. But a lot of guys are coming out of juniors going, this is it.
Yeah.
I already know that. Or they come out of NCAA, like Johnny Walker was an NCAA guy, right? Arizona?
Yep.
University Arizona State. He comes in and he's like, hey, I'm just having fun. This is my job after I graduated, maybe my off year before I start my real career.
Yep.
And then you're like, hey, there's another opportunity. You can go play overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Your room and board's paid for. And you get to play hockey, which
yep.
we all love to do. And you can go to school again, like Evan Stofflet went over there,
Absolutely.
Got his master's degree
yep.
in human resources. I literally had him lined up to take a human resources job in this building at KSL. Like, that seems like, this is a big company.
Oh, yeah.
I'm surprised they let me work here sometimes. It's like, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Josh laughs because he knows it's true.
Keep fooling him.
Yeah. But, well, I don't even know if they know I still work here. I just come in whenever. My badge still works sometimes. But anyway, like, why wouldn't you take that opportunity? Yeah. Go get your graduate degree for free. And now you can walk in into KSL and say, I have a master's degree. Yeah, it's from Cardiff University or whatever.
Yeah.
They don't. Maybe that makes it sound more legit than Weber State. I don't know.
Well, it's a story to tell, right?
Right.
Like when I played in France, and when I went to my first and only real job interview, we talked about hockey the entire time. They didn't ask me about my qualifications.
Yeah.
They just wanted to know what it was like playing hockey and living in France. And
yeah.
I think they found my Hockey Fights page and were more intrigued with that than my.
You have Hockey Fights on.
Yeah, I
Uh-oh.
Wasn't very good at it, but I tried.
All right. Spell your last name so everybody can Google it.
Nope. Unfortunately, there's no videos.
Don't worry. It's linked. That's one of the greatest things about it is, and I had the opportunity coming, like, you know, I played junior, then I played junior college, and then, you know, I was at the University of North Dakota when I got the phone call from Joe Bernardi at the time saying, hey, we're starting hockey in Utah. And I think he basically said, like, you know you're not going to play at North Dakota. So, like, why don't you just come here and you'll play? And all of a sudden, there's an opportunity. And as I finished that, I got another phone call. Here's another opportunity to go play here. Go play. And it's like, I knew I was never going to make the NHL. I knew a lot of the teams I was playing for didn't even have enough money to pay for practice.
Yeah.
But I still was like, I'm going to go live here. I'm going to go live there. And my last offer was to go play in the Netherlands.
Yep.
And I was like, I'm going to do it. But then that's when we also decided to have kids. It's like, what a cool experience to go travel wherever. It has nothing to do with not liking the Utah
yeah.
Grizzlies. And what a cool experience for you. Now you're lined up. I see you travel all the time.
Too much.
Yeah, probably too much. But you've got, like, you've sent players to Romania.
Yeah.
You've sent players to China. And now you get the opportunity to go see him play.
Yeah.
Like, tell us a little bit about, like, how cool is that? And where did you come up with that idea of networking like that?
I like to say I've been everywhere and seen absolutely nothing. Yeah. I mean, I've seen a lot of arenas, a lot of, you know, VIP buffets, and that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a pretty cool experience. I mean, I think you grow a lot as a person traveling and having to, especially I started going over by myself, like figuring it out when I was pretty young, like my mid-20s, and I'd have to sink or swim, like get on the wrong train and go the wrong way half an hour and not figure it out until my stop was supposed to come. Yeah. And I'm like, oh geez.
Yep.
I've had to kind of, you know, learn to navigate myself around the world and deal with, you know, situations as they arise, and sometimes great, sometimes not. And I think it's helped me grow a lot as a person, but it's a pretty cool experience. Like instead of sitting in office, I'm going to, I've been some pretty random places like Poland, like Katowice, Poland. I've been to, I remember I was in an airport one time and one of my guys was playing the Olympics for Slovenia. And I told him, I said, if you guys make it to the quarters or the semis or whatever it was, I said, I'll come. And I was like, actually like trying to figure out how I can get to Pyeongchang, like from like London where I was right then before the next game. It just wouldn't work out. But I mean, to have the opportunity to do that as a job and, you know, have, you know, not have to come out of pocket for it.
Yeah.
Is kind of cool.
Yeah. And, that part's cool too. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, now, well, I'm working with Optima now. And it's cool because we have our specialties. Like I handle like Germany, the UK, Denmark, Norway, France. So, I mean, they're good countries to be in, and I'm not going to, you know, the far reaches of the Ukraine and Eastern Slovakia and stuff as much anymore.
Yeah.
But even though
it's gotta be cool, like the first time, but also like,
yeah. And some of the random places have been the coolest places. Like where Ryan was in Hungary and Czechoslovakia, it's 45 minutes outside of Budapest. And I mean, you can, I think me and my old partner took all of our guys out to dinner there and spent like $150 for like 25 guys to go out to like a decent restaurant. Like it was unbelievable. And the quality of life is high for your dollar.
It's crazy because, you know, my daughter's in South Korea right now for another week. I'm flying out tomorrow to pick her up and to bring her cat home. The whole reason I'm flying to Korea, I paid $3,000 to fly to Korea.
Expensive cat.
Yeah, to bring my daughter's cat home because the army doesn't know she has a cat. Yeah. So anyway, and towns like that, like the town she lives in, we went to this restaurant and we went in and the lady said, you look hungry. And we're like, yeah, we're ready to order. She's like, let me bring out some food first. And then you guys take a minute to order.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what do you mean bring out some? I'm here to buy food. And she's like, no, you look too hungry. We're going to feed you first. And then we ended up, dinner took 4.5 hours.
Oh, I believe it.
And it was like, it was an event. They kept bringing stuff out, and I don't eat a lot, and I was full. I was full when she brought out the appetizer that was free, and I'm like, man, this food's going to be crazy. And they bring us our tab, and I'm like, oh, no, I'm paying for everyone. She's like, oh, no, I know. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, it's like $100. And easy. I fed the four of us, like my family, and my daughter brought two other people from the army with her. And I was like, that's insane.
And it's crazy, though, like how, like you said, how long it takes to eat meals in these countries. Like I'm a 15 minute in and out guy.
Yeah.
These guys, like, I mean, it's a 2 hour ordeal. Like, I mean, I'm exhausted by the end of it.
Yeah.
But it's,
it's
a social event. I mean, and they go late. I mean, it's not uncommon to get back from dinner at 8 or 9 o'clock.
Right.
And I mean, here by 9 o'clock, I'm getting ready for bed.
Well, they were telling us this town that my daughter's going to now in Germany. They're like, a lot of the places don't even come with kitchens.
Yeah.
Because you don't cook.
You bring your kitchens with you when you move in Germany.
Right. Wild. Yeah. Or you just plan on eating. Yeah. You go, there's just little cafes and stuff that you go
near Frankfurt. Is she going?
She's right by Frankfurt. Yeah.
Ramstein or something?
No, it's called Simbach, something like that. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, it's supposed to be really cool. And it's supposed to be like a lot of, like, you just go out into the village and eat with the rest of the people in the village in this area that's like almost like a mall. There's like 4 or 5 different places, but you all sit in the same place.
Yep.
And it's supposed to be just like real sit down and spend 6 hours trying to have dinner.
Try to not force yourself to have too many of their local beverages.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's, we're going, like she's going in October. We're missing Oktoberfest, but next year.
You're fortunate.
Next year. I want to experience it.
I've done it, and I think I gained 15 pounds that trip. Like, legitimately 15 pounds.
Yeah, well.
Wife wasn't impressed.
Oh, yeah, sometimes you just got to earn it, right?
Yeah.
All right, so tell us a little bit more about your team. Where can people in Vernal, do you think everybody in Vernal already knows about it?
No, and that's the thing. Like, we've always, like, we really haven't had, like, from starting from, you know, kind of the ground up, we've never really devoted a lot of money to advertising. It's all been word of mouth. And I think we've got a lot of traction based on that, but yeah, we really haven't advertised. And a lot of people, like, we were at the fair, the state fair or the county fair, whatever it is, in July. And, like, we had a few of our players in town already who got released from tier two camps, and they were doing, like, a meet and greet booth. And, like, these kids, like, they were the talk of the event. Like, they were signing autographs the whole time. They had more free food than they knew what to do with. But
nice.
It was,
that's awesome.
Yeah. Like, it was, I think a lot of people are getting knowledge of the organization through events like that. We play at the Western Park Ice Arena there. Home games start at 8:30.
Wow, that's late.
Yeah. Warm ups at 8:00.
Yeah.
Cause there was a public skate prior.
Oh, nice.
And
tear up the ice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, but it's, they do a good job, and the ice is good there. So it's so cold, right?
Yeah. I've always liked that place.
Yeah. You can watch it online on Flow TV as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. And so if they're looking, you guys have a website, you guys have Facebook.
VernalOilers.com. All the social media is at Vernal Oilers.
And Vernal Oilers, that name just fits like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And
were you an Oilers fan? Did you name the team?
I was one of the group that decided on it and just kind of fit. I mean, we didn't
want it definitely fits.
We didn't want to do the dinosaur thing because everything else is. We wanted to kind of be unique.
Okay. Yeah.
Because that is what...
Everything else up there is the Raptors or whatever?
Yep.
Okay.
And everything is dinosaur-orientated.
The T-Rex.
We wanted to kind of create our own identity, and it's been good so far, and I think it really identifies with the people that work in the area and,
all
and
oil
the industry, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But they're, I mean, the biggest thing about there versus even down here is if we need something, like if something needs to be done, everyone in the community drops everything to help, whereas here, like... If I had to do something here, I'd have to do it all myself.
Right.
And so it's just the people can't be beat. Like, I'm super, super loyal to those people up there and the people that help out with the team. And all the big supporters up there are fantastic people, and I'm grateful that they're involved.
That's awesome. I love to hear it. I love just that small town feel. I used to feel that when I was in Ogden.
It's grown a lot, though.
Yeah, it's grown a lot. Well, and I'm from St. George, which I don't talk about a lot, but... I grew up in St. George, and I definitely had that there. And then when I lived in Bottineau, North Dakota, that was just such a hometown feel. Like, you just grow to really love that stuff.
Yeah.
And that's cool to find a hockey program in a area like that. I can see you guys just thriving there.
I think our first year, we had billets that drove all the way to, like, the first year we were in a different league that played in Alberta for some reason.
Wow.
And we had billets that drove to... 3 hours north of Edmonton to come to the playoffs.
Jeez.
Like, it was a 32-hour drive.
Oh, my Lord.
And so, I mean, they're committed, and it was...
Or should be committed.
It's impressive to see the loyalty, and they love the team, and we're very grateful.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, man. Well, we're excited for the season. Like I said, I'll drag Tegan up with me. Come up to some games. I'm pumped to see it. I know the work that you do. I know you put on a good program.
I actually have a former Grizzly as one of the coaches too.
Who's that?
Ryan House.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
He was talking about you the other day.
He said, yeah, when I played there, I think we had a fireman that was like our emergency backup. Like, yeah, I know him.
Yeah, yeah. That's, all the Grizzlies that have come here, this will be my 26th year. And I've been on the team every year for the past 26 years, at least for a couple games or whatever.
Gold watch when you're done.
Yeah, something. Just right now, all I got from was bad hips. But Tegan's honestly taking over my spot as the E-Bug this year. Anyway, all right, well, we're excited, man. Tell us the website one more time.
VernalOilers.com.
VernalOilers.com. Anything else we can say before you go?
I think that'll do it.
Okay, man. Well, I appreciate you taking the time and coming on the show.
Appreciate it.
And that is the Utah Puck Report.